Good morning. This is the International Connection. Today we're joined by Joe Bruta from the Executive Intelligence Review. Vaughn, perhaps you can introduce.
Okay, Adam. Today Joe Bruta has been, we have him on the line to discuss his articles in the Executive Intelligence Review, which seem to be concentrating on the fact the Sikh terrorism is being heavily deployed out of various parts of Canada. And Joe, could you summarize what you've been writing in the IR over the last 3 months on that topic?
Yeah, Bob, we've been looking at the Sikh terrorist question quite a bit. That is the IR for obvious reasons. There's currently an extreme threat to the life of Rajiv Gandhi, who will be in New York between October 22nd and 25th to attend the 40th anniversary celebrations of the UN. Now, Rajiv Gandhi has been a target of Sikh assassins. There have been several plots unearthed over the last year. And, of course, his mother, Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, was killed by a Sikh terrorist network. Now, what we are concerned with, and we've looked at these things internationally, is that Sikh terror, regardless of the ideology of the specific assassin, whether he is a Sikh motivated on the basis of alleged separatist causes, or, let's say, a Shiite Muslim motivated on the basis of some sort of obscure fundamental reason, the ideology of the assassin does not have necessarily anything to do with the reason why the individual was assassinated. And in the question of Indira Gandhi, and in the question of the ongoing threat to Rajiv Gandhi, the Sikhs are merely manipulated and deployed from the outside. That is, regardless of any motivation of an individual who pulls the trigger to kill Indira Gandhi or to attempt to kill Rajiv Gandhi, the reason why that person is set up to carry out that assassination is unknown to the individual assassin, who is essentially a patsy. Now, in that context, we have looked at such places as Canada, Great Britain, the United States, Russia, and other countries and places which have been harboring Sikh terrorists, well-known Sikh terrorists, who undoubtedly played a role in the assassination of Indira Gandhi, and who are certainly clearly at this point a threat to Rajiv Gandhi. And, you know, we're dedicated to exposing and uprooting these networks. Now, in the articles in question, which you refer to, what I discuss, and I imagine this would be of particular interest to your audience in Toronto and in Canada, is that Canada has unfortunately existed for a number of years as a safe house, that is, as a protected area where international terrorists coming from all parts of the world have been harbored and protected. And then, using Canada as a base, they have crossed into the U.S. or into other countries to carry out their actions. And one concern I have, and one concern we have given the trip of Rajiv Gandhi to New York City, is that it is very easy to cross, as you know, to cross the U.S.-Canadian border. It is very easy for terrorists to cross. It is very easy for drug runners to cross. It is very easy for any sort of criminal operation to contraband goes back and forth, terrorists go back and forth. Consequently, the Sikh terrorists that live and have lived for years in such places as Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, Vancouver, etc., are situated in such a way that without really that much difficulty, or even with difficulty, but in any case, they certainly are able to cross the border into the U.S. and potentially carry out a killing of Rajiv Gandhi or other individuals. And we consider this to be a national security threat to the United States, as well as other countries, that these terrorists are allowed to exist in Canada, that the authorities do not clean up the problem, despite the protests of numerous countries, publications, and others. And that's basically what I'm concerned with in these articles you've mentioned.
Okay, in your article in the IR for September 27th, you say It could hardly be said that the British intelligence playground, Canada, is any less instrumental in protecting and sponsoring Sikh terrorism than its co-thinkers to the south. Now, how is Canada a British intelligence playground? Can you explain that phrase?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's straightforward, really. I mean, Canada, of course, for, you know, a couple hundred years was a colony, and then they termed it a commonwealth of the British Empire. Now, legalistic definitions have changed. There's been various reorganizations, but in terms of actual control and power, there's no question that Canada will not do anything against the policies of the British Foreign Office, and regardless of the Constitution or whatever it's called now, in Canada, the British have an open field, especially the British intelligence operators have an open field in Canada. And this is one of the issues and one of the problems that they have in the United States and Canada right now.
Okay, now, when you say British, and from your other writings, you mean the financial oligarchs in the city of London, not particularly the citizens of Britain. Am I accurate there?
Yes. I mean, that's, I think, one way to explain it, since they're going to be in a situation. Of course, India would be, I suppose you could say, it was like the crown jewel in the British Empire, Britain looted India for hundreds of years. Britain never really accepted the idea of losing India, and to this day, Britain maintains massive intelligence capabilities in India, and Britain's policy towards India is not a friendly one, and this is one of the reasons why we have these type of networks in Canada. But basically, you see, in terms of the British oligarchy, if you will, the Indian government, you know, India was administered for a long period of time, not even by the British government, qua government, or not even by the British crown from a legal standpoint, but it was administered by the East India Company. In the same way, in fact, that Canada for a long period of time, to the, you know, mid-19th century, was administered primarily by the Hudson Bay Company. These are private corporations tied to the British nobility, the British royalty, and other powerful interests, not only in Britain, but actually throughout continental Europe. And these are certainly networks that we consider to be vitally important today as a threat to Rajiv Gandhi.
How did these networks from the 19th century maintain their influence in the realms of the State Departments and Foreign Affairs Department? I mean, a lot of people would say, oh, those are old companies. Have you tracked through the individuals who were related to those people 100 years ago?
Well, yeah, we have looked at that. I mean, can you restate your question? I'm sorry, I had a little difficulty hearing you.
Okay, you're mentioning companies from 100 years ago.
Yes.
How did these people maintain their control through the industrializing process of the 20th century? A lot of people think those were very old countries or companies.
Yes, right. Well, it's really not so difficult to see. I mean, institutions, you know, whether religious institutions, political parties, or even family networks tend to exist for long periods of time without really being destroyed, worn down, or whatever. And this is something that we see in Canada. I mean, I'm sure if you look at the, I forget some of the exact families, but if you look at the colonization of Canada by Britain, the transplanting of lesser sons of various British noble houses to Canada, you see a continuity to the present day. Certainly, if you look at various the five banking institutions or so in Canada that predominantly run Canadian finance, you can trace that back to Britain, as you can trace back the mining interests of Canada, which, after all, were basically spin-offs of the old Hudson Bay and then Canadian Pacific operation. And then politically, if you look in terms of the government, you know, obviously formally you have the Privy Council, you have the group, the Prime Minister's office, which function essentially as the North American, or in any case the Canadian arm of British intelligence. That is what Canada is. Canada is definitely not something you could classify as a sovereign country. nation or a sovereign state, Canada is still, to this day, under the control of Britain. Most of the important decisions that are made in Ottawa are actually made in Britain. And the decisions that relate to the fact that Canada is a notorious safe house for terrorist groups certainly are not entirely the responsibility of Ottawa, but also the responsibility of powerful networks that are based in London.
I find that very interesting. Very curious. I mean, my immediate reaction is to say that that Canada is controlled more by the United States than by Britain, if you're talking in economic terms. And if you're talking in terms of cooperation between intelligence units, certainly the CIA and the FBI have a far greater relationship with Canada's security forces than anything that Britain has. The way you talk, it sounds like the last time you actually researched Canada was back in the early 20s and in the last century.
See, this is something that may appear to be the case to the naive man on the street. But if you look at the tightly controlled business world of Canada in terms of the Canadian banking networks, if you look at the corporations, and if you look at intelligence, it will become clear to you that is not the case.
Well,
Canada, like Australia, like New Zealand, like other former Commonwealth or present Commonwealth countries, so-called, are run out of Britain. It's simply the fact of the matter.
Joe, Tom Rich, I just have a question with regard to that point, and that is that how many people do you think it is required at the top in order to keep the fact that it's these financial oligarchical entities that run the show, and that the parliament, to use some of your writings, is just a parliamentary game show? How many people involved in the Privy Council do you really think have to know the real movements and where the real power lies?
Well, I mean, it's hard to really estimate such things. I mean, there's a question of levels of knowledge and of different strata within the administration. I mean, many people, let's get some specifics in terms of Sikh terrorism, in terms of Canada's relation to that. Now, it is the case that there is an individual in Vancouver by the name of Talwinder Singh Parmar. And this is an answer to your question with a specific example. Now, Talwinder Singh Parmar, who lives in Vancouver, whose address is well-known, I could give it to you, I don't have it at the moment, but it's a well-known address, is an individual who is an admitted murderer who fled India in 1981. Not only that, more importantly, he is to this day the head of an international terrorist organization called Babar Khalsa. Babar Khalsa, according to the Indian government and according to its own spokesman, have been responsible for several hundred assassinations in the Punjab and in New Delhi and throughout India from 1977 to the present. Talwinder Singh Parmar travels to Germany on a Canadian passport. He travels into Windsor, Ontario for meetings. He travels to Toronto. He travels to Sudbury, throughout the nation of Canada and elsewhere, to organize terrorist assassinations. Now, there is outstanding a demand by the Indian government that Talwinder Singh Parmar, who has admitted to various murders and who there is an outstanding warrant against, be deported from Canada to India to face trial and, of course, imprisonment because he already admits to his crimes. However, Talwinder Singh Parmar continues to organize assassin teams in Canada to be deployed against Rajiv over this coming week in New York and otherwise to send teams into India. In fact, there is abundant evidence that Talwinder Singh Parmar was implicated, was involved in the assassination of Sant Mangalwal, who people may know was the Sikh moderate leader who had signed and negotiated a settlement of certain Sikh demands with the Delhi authorities in August, in late July, following which on August 20th he was murdered, with some indications being that the teams that killed Nandwal originated in Canada. Now you ask yourself, how is this possible? Now if you look at that, you'll see various people giving various justifications and clumsy excuses for how this could occur. But the main reason is that at the highest level, it is the policy of the British government. It is their policy to dismember India. This is British intelligence policy. To fragment India into various states, to reduce its power. To this end, it is their policy to have Rajiv Gandhi either assassinated or displaced from office and cause chaos and terror. That is the policy of the leadership of the British government. Now, in terms of the specific RCMP agent in Vancouver, or the specific official in the Ministry of External Affairs in Ottawa, the reasons why Parmar is projected, or the reasons why he says that he's projected, or the reasons why he would defend his existence in Canada, you know, are numerous. There's all kinds of reasons he would give. But that's not the actual reason why Parmar is protected. And that's not the actual reason why you have terrorist meetings in Toronto of notorious international terrorists. So whereas there may be all kinds of reasons offered by the lower level individual in the Canadian government or law enforcement, the actual reason is different.
On what evidence? I mean, you continually make the point that the Canadians are controlled by the British government, yet you have absolutely no sort of direct line of power that you've illustrated. You say the Hudson Bay Company. Well, that's a the Hudson Bay Company is like saying that Wilco is responsible for foreign policy in the United States.
I'm sorry, could you speak up? I can't hear you very well.
You are making the point that Britain has a line of power into the Canadian government. They control the Canadian government, and you use a bunch of old companies. Your line of power hasn't been illustrated, and I dispute that the British government is setting policy in Canada, and I hold fast the point that Canada's legal agreements with India don't permit it to extradite criminals. And I think the two are separate incidences.
An example, it is not because of legal agreements with India that Canada would refuse to extradite criminals. The reason why Parmar is not an India-standing trial is because it is Canadian government policy to have Rajiv Gandhi assassinated and to foster terrorism.
That's a ridiculous statement. That's a ridiculous statement. I mean, I defy you to show me the evidence of the Canadian government saying we want Rajiv Gandhi assassinated.
The Canadian government is not going to, listen, Joe Clark is not going to go to the UN and give a policy address saying, we want Rajiv Gandhi assassinated. Things do not work that way. In fact, Joe Clark may have no knowledge of what policy is. And from what I've seen of Joe Clark, that's a fair thing to say. But the policy is that, and there are various legalistic reasons, that is cover stories given for why certain things occur.
It seems that what you're trying to point out here, Joe, is that there's a core group of people behind the government within the bureaucracies with ties to large multinational firms, sort of a secret society, if we can say, that is behind the scenes pulling strings without the knowledge of the people who really control the legal stamp of approval, so to speak, the ministers, and the people that come out in the press.
Yeah, except I wouldn't really use the term secret society because it's not,
yeah, it's not
really
secret.
Fundamentally secret. It's simply people are blind to certain things, and to that extent they can't see it. But let me give you another example. There is an organization in Canada called the Society, the Federation of Sikh Societies, which is based in Ottawa, which is chaired by an individual named Gucharan Singh, he's a Canadian citizen, and in fact he's an employee of the federal government. He works in Transport Canada. Now, the Federation of Sikh Societies is, even by its public statements, in favor of Sikh terrorism. In other words, even for forgetting what counterintelligence investigations would show about this organization. If you simply look at its public statements, if you simply realize that the Federation of Secrets, for example, the day after Indira Gandhi was assassinated, the Federation of Sikh Societies and its international organization, the World Sikh Organization, held champagne parties in London congratulating the assassins. They held prayer vigils in Los Angeles before the news came that she had actually died,
mm-hmm.
praying that she would die. Now, the Canadian arm of that organization, which prayed for Indira, and which, by the way, is headed by an individual in London named Dr. Jagat Singh Chauhan, is headed by an individual who publicly stated on BBC Radio that he was responsible for Indira Gandhi's assassination. The Canadian arm of that organization is funded by the Ministry of Multiculturalism in Ottawa, quote-unquote, to promote Sikh values. Now, it's not simply a question of funds. By the way, this terrorist-supporting organization, the Federation of Sikh Societies, receives $50,000, $60,000 a year by Ottawa, by this ministry, to promote Sikh values, whatever these are. Somehow Ottawa defines Sikh values as being murder. But in any case, $50,000 a year, one could say, well, this is not really such a large amount of money, and it really, it just pays for office space, so what's the big deal? The big deal is the legitimacy given to this organization by Ottawa, knowing fully well what this organization is. Now, let me give you another example.
No, wait, let's deal with that example.
Mm-hmm.
What you're essentially saying is are two things. One, that this cultural organization receives money from the Ministry of Culture, and two, that this cultural organization has political views which coincide with the political assassination that occur. That the Sikhs have political differences with the Gandhis has been well illustrated. I don't see the connection between the two of them, and
I
don't see you as drawing
political.
The connection between the two of them.
Let me just say something and repeat myself. The choice of term political is completely inappropriate. The head of the organization, the World Sikh Organization, key figure, Chauhan, who is the president of so-called Khalistan in Exile, Jagat Singh Chauhan admitted publicly on radio that he ordered the assassination of Indira Gandhi, and his groups in Canada and elsewhere celebrated this assassination. Now, it would dignify this group too much to call it a political group, and it's not a political assassination of Indira Gandhi, it's the murder of Indira Gandhi. This group is run by an individual who claimed the murder of Indira Gandhi.
No. The group that's funded in Canada is a member group of a larger organization, and that organization is the one that's responsible under your evidence. To say that the Canadian government is funding the international umbrella organization is incorrect. They are funding a cultural organization in Canada.
You see, were you trained as a lawyer? Because it's exactly that type of thinking that prevents an individual from understanding how intelligence matters actually work. It's not a question of pedantic legal definitions. In fact, you see, assassinations and crime in general and terrorism does not work through formal organizations. It works through networks. And when you look at the relationship of the Federation of Sikh Societies as a formal organization to the World Sikh Organization as a formal organization, that is primarily, from an investigative standpoint, to examine and to investigate what the actual chain of command is as an assassin network. Here we have an organization led by Gurcharan Singh who praises murder. Now, is that someone who should be supported by Ottawa, by Canadian taxpayers?
But he isn't.
To support someone who praises murder, who is a direct agent of someone who claimed Indira Gandhi. And see, this is just one example. There are other examples throughout Canada. There's an example of Talwinder Singh Parmar, who I already mentioned. There's Gurcharan Singh. There is the fact that there are meetings that have taken place in Hamilton, Ontario, in Toronto, Ontario, in Sarnia, in Windsor, Ontario, in Bowmanville, Ontario, all kinds of obscure places which one would think would have nothing to do with the Punjab, except these towns are utilized for international terrorism.
Now, Joe, if I could just ask you one other thing, and that is with regard to the institutions here in Toronto that you've reported are lending assistance to these networks. Specifically, I'm interested in if you could review the information with regard to the facts to the University of Toronto and who at the University of Toronto is lending support to these networks.
Well, I think the meeting you're probably referring to is the Islamic Circle of North America.
Right.
Dubai, is that it?
Yes.
Okay, well, this is an example of something that I wrote on. On July 4th through 7th, there was a conference sponsored by the Islamic Circle of North America, which had 1,000 people or so represented at it, which included meeting terrorist-supporting individuals throughout the Middle East. It included terrorists from Afghanistan, terrorists from India, terrorists from Iran, terrorists from Syria, terrorists from Egypt. It also included Sikhs who attended this conference, and this conference took place at the University of Toronto. Now, I wouldn't say for that reason that we could say the University of Toronto ran this conference. It didn't. The conference simply happened to take place there.
Right.
But the fact that this conference could take place in Canada or in Toronto more broadly is an indication of the problem we have. Now, the same week, there was an Ayatollah from Iran by the name of Ayatollah Zamani who traveled to Toronto with an 8-man delegation. Now, the formal pretext for this visit is that Zamani, being a religious figure, allegedly, that is an Ayatollah, an Iranian Ayatollah, was coming to Toronto to organize for the Hajj, you know, the Islamic pilgrimage to Mecca every year. In actual fact, Zamani came to the United States on July 4th weekend, two of these circles that set up this conference, to plan terrorism. That is the fact of the matter. And, you know, this is just one further example of the problems we have, that such a meeting could take place so openly, that the Canadian government granted a visa to this individual is extraordinary. This Zamani is a terrorist. He fields hit teams internationally. He is well known by intelligence agencies internationally as a terrorist controller, yet he was allowed to come to Canada, to travel to Toronto, to meet with Islamic terrorist leaders in Toronto to prepare assassinations. And this was allowed by the Ministry of External Affairs and the various other ministries in Ottawa, which could okay or deny such visiting permits. Yet they allowed it, knowing fully well what this individual was up to.
Under what evidence do you make the assumption that they fully were aware fully of this man's credentials?
Well, because there's certain things you have to assume. In other words, if I was on Bloor Street and I asked someone, gee, you know, Ayatollah Zamani's coming to town, what do you think? Well, you know, what is he going to say? No one, you know, the average person would never have heard of Ayatollah Zamani, and it is not someone that would ring anything like that. However, if you're dealing with governments, we have to assume that in Ottawa, in the CSIS, in the Ministry of External Affairs, there are individuals. Obviously, there are individuals whose job it is to, for example, analyze Mideast developments, investigate Islamic terrorism. You know, I'm sure if you get a telephone directory of the Ottawa government and you go through the Ministry of External Affairs, you'll see it's broken down into various divisions, and it'll probably be very easy for you readily to find the two or three individuals who are mandated by the Canadian government to be experts in this area. And such individuals, you can assume, are fluent speakers of Farsi, have spent years in the Middle East, have spent maybe 20 years investigating Mideast based intelligence and terrorist networks who have met with intelligence personnel from the United States, from Britain, from France, from Italy, and from other places. Right? This we can only assume. Therefore, that this occurs can only be, it cannot be explained from the standpoint of naivete. That we cannot assume to be the reason. It cannot be explained from the standpoint of some sort of, grand oversight and blunder. I mean, let me give you another example.
No, wait.
We had, showing how this works, the World Sikh Organization, which I said is the overall command center for Sikh terrorism internationally, and which claimed credit for the killing of Indira Gandhi, and which is continuously threatening the life of Rajiv Gandhi from Canada and from other countries, is run, the general director, general secretary, one of its top leaders, is the general secretary's name is General Jaswant Singh Buller. Now, Buller lives in Washington as a retired general from the Indian Army who, a number of years back, militarily trained, intelligence trained, a number of years back, essentially defected from India to become an agent of foreign powers. Last year helped set up the World Sikh Organization when it was founded in New York City. And presently is an individual who, given his military background, is very much involved in the the commando side of terrorism, is involved in training and other activities. Now, according to Buller, who praised the murder of Indira Gandhi, etc., and calls for the murder of Rajiv Gandhi, Buller has stated that he has received intercepts between the Indian government and embassies abroad, that is, high commission offices abroad of India in various states, dealing with the World Sikh Organization, dealing with Sikh terrorism, and that these intercepts have been given to him by a friendly government. And in the context of the statement that Buller made, the friendly government being referred to was Canada.
I mean, you can make that statement, but I mean, by your own quoting of it, he didn't name Canada directly. You're just making that assumption. But to get back to
reference to Canada. He also went on to say, by the way, that he thought very highly of the Canadian government. That even though that he thought the new government of Mulroney was very good, very quote unquote civil rights oriented. He went on to say in the same statement that, representatives of the World Sikh Organization have met with Joe Clark. He went on to say that the World Sikh Organization has many friends in the NDP. He went on to say that there, he named particular politicians besides Clark that he thought highly of.
But I mean, I could name politicians that I'm friendly with, and I could
yes,
name parties that I'm friendly with.
Yes, but I don't think you're a murderer, are you? I mean, I'm talking about an individual who is a murderer.
But what's the difference between some guy who calls himself a murderer, and all of a sudden his credibility is heaped on him because he can simply list off a number of politicians?
It's not a question. No, it's not. Look, this is not, Buller is not some, adolescent in Washington who's enamored of conspiracies, intelligence matters, sort of going on some fantasy trip of who he talks to. Buller is a 60-year-old or so retired general who, in fact, was one of the leading generals in the 71 war between India and Pakistan, of great military and intelligence experience, who defected from India, and who, by his own statements, is running an organization which was involved in the murder of Indira Gandhi, and he has issued virtually monthly or more frequently, threats against the lives of Rajiv Gandhi. Now, it could be the case that certain things he said obviously are not necessarily correct in terms of who he meets with, etc. However, he does state them. However, the Canadian government has never denied them, in the same way that the Canadian government has never reported Talwinder Singh Karma, in the same way that they allow in the Toronto area an individual by the name of Kuldeep Singh Sodhi from Bowmanville to operate unimpeded.
Yeah, but it, I mean,
because the Canadian government denied it is automatically true. I mean, the American government, as a matter of practice, always says we will neither deny or confirm. I mean, what's the difference when the Canadian government does it? I think you have
I'm not defending the U.S. government. I mean, when you have rotten diplomatic practices, I'm not saying, you know, it's... Well, the point is that they haven't done it. I'm not making an unfair comparison between Canada
but
and
think others. I think there's two questions that you have to answer. I think the first one is key to the whole thing. You started off by creating a model whereby Canada was just a puppet government.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, if this is happening and the Canadian government is allowing it to happen, who is forcing the Canadian government to allow it to happen besides the British?
Besides the British, there's all kinds of networks in Canada. Canada, as I said, is not really a nation, unfortunately. It never existed as a nation, and you have various powerful intelligence networks operating in Canada. The predominant
Who's?
In Britain.
Who's? Besides Britain, who else?
Well, the Soviets are also very powerful in Canada, and have spent various years building up their capabilities in Canada, as the Trudeau administration certainly adequately demonstrates.
Okay, so every single country's got a hand in the pie. The last question should be asked is that when the Air India jet went down, the Sikh terrorists that were allegedly responsible for it were trained in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what countries are controlling the United States, because obviously it's they can't control what terrorists are working inside the United States, and it's not just the Sikh terrorists. The IRA has ample support in the United States. What foreign countries are running the United States as a puppet, because they have the exact same problems that Canada does.
What you bring up is an important thing to bring up. There is, of course, a very obvious major problem in the United States, as indicated by the Air India thing. I mean, everyone knows this case of Frank Camper, I believe, who was a mercenary trainer down in Alabama who trained Sikhs. So there's no question that, in fact, just as the Canadian government protects Sikh terrorists, there does exist protection of Sikh terrorists within the United States.
By the American government.
Hmm?
By the American government. They've never prosecuted Camper.
And
in fact, Camper is tied to the American government.
Hmm?
And in fact, Camper is tied to the American government.
Yes.
So
but
the American government is guilty as Canada.
The distinction is that the leadership of the Canadian government, which resides in London, is committed to the murder of Rajiv Gandhi. President Reagan is not committed to the murder of Rajiv Gandhi, and in fact is against that. But nevertheless, within the Federal Bureau of Investigations in particular, there are networks which, yes, in fact, have protected Sikh terrorism in the U.S. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the problem in the U.S. in the way that we do.
I find it very presumptive, and I think we should conclude on this point, that you can on the one hand say that because Canada has Sikh terrorists that may or may not be working inside Canada, they're controlled by a foreign power. But the United States, although they have the same Sikh terrorists working inside the United States, they're not controlled by a foreign power, and Ronald Reagan makes the decisions. I think it's absurd.
There has been a problem in the U.S. that increasingly, because of incompetent policies, there's been increasing control of U.S. foreign policy by the outside. As, for example, this insane bombing raid of Tunisia indicates, since it clearly was not in U.S. interest that it allowed it to occur. So, in fact, obviously there is infiltration and controlling hand over policy in Washington from various states. Various states have these things. The point to be made about Canada is that whereas the U.S. is a country, is a nation, which is feeling the effects of outside manipulation on the terrorist question, in particular because of the corruption and the treason of the FBI, Canada, on the other hand, the point has to be faced, is simply not a government, it's not a country, and this is indicated not only by the terrorist situation, but a whole variety of examples. But in any case, I don't think that is really the key thing we should concern ourselves with in terms of so-called constitutional questions about Canada, because it's really not that significant from an international standpoint. What is the way in which terrorist organizations have been increasingly deployed internationally. And what is of interest for Canadians is to prevent, yet again, another assassination, this time of Rajiv Gandhi, from taking place from networks based in Toronto, in Montreal and Vancouver, Edmonton, in Sydney, Nova Scotia, and all the other little towns and cities of Canada, which have been proven to have been and are hotbeds of Sikh terrorism.
And it's going to happen in New York, you say?
Hmm?
You say that an assassination attempt will happen in New York.
No, I'm not saying it will happen, or even that the attempt will happen, but there is currently, at the time of this interview, which is the 17th of October, a threat, a very grave threat, that such an attempt will be made in New York. That is what I'm saying.
Okay, with that, I think we're running out of time. We should probably end it there. Thanks very much for joining us. Thanks for answering the questions. For Bob Marshall, for Tom Rich, my name's Adam Vaughn. That's the International Connection for this Saturday. Okay, hope.